When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
I continue to be very pleased in my ability to find interesting people to join me in conversation on the Soft as Steel podcast. I found another one. His name is David Bradley. David combines more than 25 years of experience as a global architect, businessman, and industry leader with world-class training as a certified professional coach. He has walked the talk as an owner of his own design firm and stepped into leadership positions in the American Institute of Architects. He has coached high-performing individuals, firms, studios, and leaders across North America, including teams of C-suite professionals at the United Nations. Having experienced the challenges of running his own design firm, David founded Blueprint for Living Coaching in 2014 with a mission to inspire architects and design professionals around the world to create lives well-lived from intention and purpose. In his coaching work with both individuals and teams, David focuses on developing their bold leadership based on the principles of integrity, effective communication, empathy, and respect. His focus on an understanding of complex team dynamics provides clients with the tools they need to set stretch goals, create accountability structures, and generate measurable results. Do you want to enjoy greater work-life balance? Do you want to develop more effective leadership? Do you want to experience deeper personal fulfillment? Do you want to blow the lid off of your creative expression? These are the kinds of questions David asks his clients routinely, both when he qualifies new coaching clients as well as his ongoing work with a mastermind that he operates currently. David, welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast.
Dennis, thank you so much for the introduction. It's great to be here.
Nobody will know all the effort that went into me getting to that last phrase, and you're welcome.
It's all great. The effort was worth it, always is, when you get to those questions.
Is it live or is it Memorex? That's the real question, and we're live. I appreciate you being here. As I said, as I opened up, again, one of the things that's been really a blessing to me is that exploring the wonderful world of LinkedIn with the support of my virtual assistant, I found some really interesting people who, when I reached out with a very vanilla style connection request, decided for whatever reason that they accepted the connection. And then I took a look at their profiles. And when I looked at yours, I said, this is a guy that I'd really like to talk to. So I'm glad we're talking. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The last portion of my introduction with the questions included, but you have in how you described your work, your current work, you have words like integrity, communication, empathy, respect. And as you understand and probably well know, and now having a little bit of contact with me and maybe glancing at my book or my other work online, these are the words that are in the primary vocabulary of what I call soft skills, the qualities of people. And they're so important. And I'm sure that they're right at the center of where the focus of your work, particularly with your coaching clients, is on a regular basis. This is where it's all at. I say often to audiences, a wide range of different kinds of audiences within the construction industry, I express the idea to them that soft skills are the difference maker.
Right.
So you've got an incredible career journey. And as you shared with me earlier, you're moving on to a new chapter in the near future. This is an evergreen episode, so we won't tell specifically when you're leaving and when you're starting and where you're going. But suffice it to say, an exciting new chapter based on your description of it. But you started out as an architect, just a plain old architect.
Yeah, I actually still am. I am not practicing in terms of designing buildings, but I am still a licensed architect in both Illinois and Arizona.
Wow.
I've been very, very active in the industry. The reason I'm not practicing as an architect is because I started my coaching practice and focused on coaching architects. They were my people. It seemed to make an awful lot of sense. You know, I had spent many, many years in the industry and saw a tremendous need for coaching in architecture, in the field, largely because of the things that you were just talking about, integrity and empathy and communication, those soft skills. That's one of the reasons when you reached out on LinkedIn, I said, yeah, I want to talk to this guy because he gets it. Mm-hmm. I guess if I can riff off of those couple words just to provide some clarification too, I use integrity in my coaching with my clients as a tool. So a lot of people use integrity as a judgment. There's a moral judgment behind integrity, right? If you're not an integrity, it's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And being an integrity obviously is a good thing. That's one way of looking at it. I use it as a coaching tool with my clients as a way to bring back their personal power. Basically, the idea is this. When you are out of integrity, there's an equation and it's intentions, speaking, and actions aligned. Mm-hmm. That's integrity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if any one of those three things, your intention, your speaking, or your actions is out of alignment, then you're out of integrity. With that one little equation, what happens is when you determine that you're out of integrity, it's a power leak. So the one thing to do, there's no moral judgment behind it, but it's a tool to say, hey, I'm actually leaking my personal power here because I'm not in integrity. Mm-hmm. Either I'm not doing what I said, I'm not speaking it clearly, or my intentions have shifted. So with my clients, we take a look and I actually have them make a list of where they're in and out of integrity. You're never totally, none of us is completely in integrity all the time, right?
Yeah.
But it's a tool to take a look at, hey, where can I plug up some of these holes and take back some of that personal power? Mm-hmm. And the power the loss of power comes in the form of self-judgment, right? And blame and shame and I didn't do this thing. And we carry that energy with us, mm-hmm. but it's actually a leak. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing, and I've used this myself, is whenever you see a place where you're out of integrity, simply plugging it up, you can actually feel that come back to you. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things, like when we talk about integrity, I'm really working with people about being in integrity with themselves and being in integrity with other people. Mm-hmm. That leads to better communication. And I would say 90% of the time, the problems that my clients run into and people in general that I run into comes from not listening and not speaking clearly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times the not listening is because there's a lack of empathy. There's an mm-hmm. inability for people to get over there and understand what's motivating the person that they're interacting with.
Yeah,
we have a tendency to create this entire world. It's of our own creation. We interpret what's going on with other people without actually really trying to understand them. And then we become reactive.
Oh my.
So what I work with my clients often is, hey, listen, you know, you're coming to me with this issue with a coworker, with a boss, with a partner, a romantic partner, with a family member. Let's actually take a look at what you can take responsibility for on your side of the equation, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have to be responsible for themselves, but you've got a responsibility to understand the dynamic mm-hmm. and step into it responsibly with clarity. And I mean, so many times for many of my clients, it's just been a shift of perspective where all of a sudden the light bulb goes off and they're like, oh, I never thought about the fact that such and such was happening to them. And that colored the way that we were interacting with each other, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So all of these things, you know, that and at the end of the day, it comes down to respect for yourself mm-hmm. and for other people. Mm-hmm. So these soft skills that you focus on, I love that you bring them because so many times I have people come to me who want to fix things by doing. Mm-hmm. They want to get in there and they just tell me what to do to fix X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. The type of coaching that I end up doing focuses less on the doing. I mean, we touch on that, but it's much more focusing on the being of the person. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. The basis of my training is ontological in its nature. It's ontology being the study of being. Mm-hmm. So we start looking at, you know, I have a client recently who he needs to have a sit down with his employer. Because there's a lot of stuff going on that's really been frustrating him. And last week he came to me and he said, I know I need to have a conversation with this guy. And I also know that I want to come at it a certain way, but I know that in my gut, I want to blow up at him. Mm-hmm. I want to be really frustrated and angry with him. And so we've been working on getting him clear, getting all of that anger off the table, like processing it, seeing what's that all about, and getting him to a point where he can step in powerfully, mm-hmm. positively, and take a look at the first question I asked him was, who do you want to be about the conversation? Mm-hmm. It's a question we don't often ask ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so my job is to step in and say, hey, I know that the knee-jerk reaction is to go in with guns blazing. Is that who you want to be in this conversation? And ten times out of ten, people would logically say, no, that's not really going to be productive. Mm-hmm. So then we start looking at the softer skills. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on with you? What's going on with them? And where can we start to meet each other with respect, with some empathy, but also with clarity, mm-hmm. saying the thing, building a relationship that allows you to say the thing that needs to be said. Mm-hmm. I had a mentor once who said, from relationship, you can say anything. And it's one of the things that stuck with me throughout all of my training and through all these years. When we are in sufficient relationship with another human being, we can actually say what needs to be said. Mm-hmm. Because you've got enough relationship that you can go in and clean things up. Mm-hmm. And you can check in.
Yeah. When I hear you say relationship, the word that comes to my mind is when you're at a place where you feel you have an intimate relationship with the person, that you mm-hmm. you know them well and they know you well.
There's an understanding.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think the way everything you've said so far has been terrific to listen to. I like your notion of out of integrity, what I heard from that is it doesn't mean you're being dishonest, doesn't mean you're unethical. It simply means your words and your actions and your intentions aren't in alignment. They don't agree with each other. I will give you credit for it, but I like the feeling of it. Makes sense.
I can give you a quick personal example of how I mm-hmm. used this. There was a period several, 10 years ago where I had borrowed a sum of money from a friend and I said, I'm going to pay you back. And then no matter what I did, I couldn't manage to get the full sum of money gathered together at a time to actually hand it back over to him. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened is I started to ghost him. I started because mm-hmm. I was ashamed, mm-hmm. right? It's like, I borrowed this money. I really needed it. He was super generous and I can't pay him back in full right now. And it was awful. Right. Because I broke away from the relationship. I avoided him. Whenever we did talk, I mm-hmm. did everything I could to make sure that subject didn't come up because I was so embarrassed about not mm-hmm. being able to pay him back.
Yeah.
And I was working with my coach and he says, is there a way for you to owe him the money and still be in integrity? Mm. And that's where the light bulb went off. And I thought, okay. My intention is to pay him back. Mm-hmm. I said I would pay him back. I'm not paying him back. The one thing that's out of alignment here is my action. Mm-hmm. How could I pay him back and still be in integrity? And it dawned on me, and it was a super easy solution, right? I went to him and so first of all, I cleaned it up. I said, you know what? I feel awful. Here's what's been going on with me. Here's the reason that I've been sort of stepping away. I want to make it right. Would you accept installment payments? Because I can't seem to get it all together at once, mm-hmm. but I do intend to pay you back. And so, and he said, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Right? Sure. It was a simple thing, mm-hmm. but I had this story in my head that I had to give him everything all at once because he had given me all that money all at once. Well, I started making those payments and I was back in integrity. And now the relationship was fine. I had cleaned things up with him. I wasn't carrying the shame and the blame and the, that muck that holds us down. And I paid him back. And everything was great. That's an example of using integrity as a tool to just figure, like, I mean, the power leak when I was stuck in that being out of alignment, it was palpable. I hated it. And I was beating myself up and, oh, you're a horrible person. And what a bad friend. And all the stuff that we do to ourselves. But simply by just coming up with a different path, all of a sudden I got to be a decent human being again, by my estimation. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for sharing that personal story. Yeah. I feel like we're going to spend our time mostly talking about your coaching. Cause I think it's something that, I don't do any coaching. I'm not qualified in a number of regards. I do have a mastermind group, which is a joy. I had my call this morning with my group, and we had an absolutely phenomenal conversation just off a question that came into my mind as we started the call.
Great.
As you acquire clients, what are the two, three, if there's more than two or three, please share them. What are the things that are the biggest hurdles that you have to help them over to really get them connected to the process? Because it is a process. It's not an engagement with a fixed duration. It's not, we'll do this in three meetings or five meetings. It's a process. It's a process of establishing a connection with your client, and then over time through the continual contact, building that relationship, which may last for years. So what are the hurdles for someone that's looking at coaching?
Thanks. That's a really great question. The very first one that pops into my head, and I've run into it, I think every single time, is possibility is a hurdle. And what I mean by that is the vast majority of people, when I run into them, have lost touch with their ability to create. They've sort of narrowed themselves down with stories about what is so, and they hem themselves in. It's kind of like the story I just told, where I had narrowed myself into, there's only one way to pay this guy back, right? And I'm amazed constantly at how many people, when I ask them, what do you want, they can't tell me. And when we start working towards it, they have difficulty actually articulating it, because we don't allow ourselves that luxury to dream. We don't allow ourselves the opportunity to think beyond what we know, right? So a lot of people will say, I had one client come to me, and we were working through her business project she wanted to work on. And I said, so what's the measure of success? And she says, well, I'd love to make, I think she'd made, let's say, $85,000 the year before. And she said, I'd love to make $90,000. And I said, okay, don't hire me. And she looked kind of shocked. And I said, well, it's kind of predictable based on what you've told me, that if you work hard, it's pretty predictable, you'll make $90,000 this year if you do the same things, maybe, you know, tweak a couple things. And she said, yeah. And I said, that's not a game worth playing. I mean, it's fine if that's what you want to do, but you don't need me to do that. So when we go from predictable to what's possible, that's the sweet spot. But a lot of people have trouble doing that. And I said, what would be possible for you to do? Like, you don't necessarily know how, but you feel, you can intuit that, yeah, I could do that. And she said, wow, I could make like $150,000. Okay. I said, now we're talking, right? But she wants to increase her income by over 50%. That's a game worth playing. But it's not one that she went to automatically, right? Because we constrain ourselves constantly. We start to think small and we start to constrict. And so possibility is a big one. Having people dream and think beyond what they know is super challenging for most people. There's a rare occasion that I get somebody who just blossoms. They just haven't allowed themselves to do it. But the minute they're given permission to dream, all of a sudden, like, the dam bursts and stuff just comes out like crazy. So possibility is actually one of them. And it's a lot of what I do with folks is, hey, let's play a game that's worth playing. And let's push your boundaries a little bit. The other one, and it's right along, it's kind of related to it too, is how often we have trained ourselves to say no. We say no to everything. I can't. I'm unable to. And usually it's because we don't know how. We don't necessarily have the path laid out for us to get where we want to go. So part of what I end up working with people on is, look, tell me what you want. Tell me what your dream is. And forget about the how for now. Like, just tell me what your heart wants. What draws you forward? What's going to have you get up in the morning? And the person will say something like, you know, well, I would love to write a book. It's like, awesome. And they say, but I don't know how. Screw the how. Forget the how. Let's dream about that book and let's picture what it's going to actually feel like to complete that book. Let's put you in that space where you can embody it. You can start to envision it and see it. We'll get to the how. But most people come with, they want the how first without really thinking about the what for. And the what for is, that's the juicy part. If you don't have a what for, what's the how going to do for you? I think that maybe the last thing, just as you asked, the other biggest challenge, and I mentioned it before, is communication. Clear speaking, active listening, being able to speak your truth and say what's real in a way that has both power and compassion behind it. Most people feel that saying the bold thing is being mean. Like we've got it collapsed with being mean to other people, or I don't know. There's so much communication that happens, especially in the workplace, that is the result of people not actually communicating with each other honestly, authentically, and from relationship. So those are my things, I think.
Do you do any, this relates to process and how you do it. When you're initiating a coaching relationship, do you use any kind of assessments or tools to put into a, let's call it a fact base of information about their personality, their tendencies, those types of things?
I haven't. I've used tools before, like the Myers-Briggs, or doing a 360. And those can be really useful. For the most part, I haven't implemented that into my individual sessions with people. It's actually it's a place where I want to grow. I want to start exploring and looking into using assessments. The thing you have to be careful with assessments, I think, and it's just something to be aware of for most people, is a lot of people, they get an assessment and they accept it as truth. And an assessment is simply a tool for understanding aspects of how you show up in the world. But it's not, does this make sense? Like, people actually put so much emphasis on it and they start to identify as the assessment. So
yeah, I can
now
see
they walk around,
they
could walk around and like, I'm an ENFJ.
Right.
So that is one in the Myers-Briggs type indicator. I'm an ENFJ. That's the classification, right? That's one of 16 different types. And it's instructive if I can use it to understand certain interactions with other people and how I show up. It can also be a bit of an, how do I want to say, almost a shackle if I start to see that as the only way I show up.
Right.
So you have to be really instructive with people and say, hey, look, this is one tool. We could do any number of tools. That most of coaching is a tool, right? So you just have to take everything for what it's worth and understand that each one of us is just this supremely unique human being who's multifaceted way beyond any one assessment.
I've got a pretty substantial amount of experience with the other assessment, which is often referred to two of the large Myers-Briggs is probably the number one or two leader in terms of sales of their assessments globally. Another is the Wiley Everywhere DISC assessment, DISC, and that's the one that I have a lot of experience with. I think the things you said make sense, and I generally would agree with them. I think one of the pitfalls of assessments is if you simply label yourself based on what the language of the assessment. If you say that in the case of the DISC, you say I'm a high I. Well, right. Okay, so what does that mean? It does have to do with how it is the intention should be that as a tool, it provides you a framework and some vocabulary to attach words to how what your tendencies are from the standpoint of interacting with yourself and with other people. And that's where it becomes is a useful tool. But the mistake people make is again they look at the results and they say it's telling me that that doesn't make any sense to me, and they just either flip it in the trash can or spend more time trying to explain why the words actually are descriptive and can be useful if processed in the correct way. So it's interesting that what your thoughts are just general in the area of assessment. And it seems that you have developed and rely on a methodology that you've developed from your readings and your experience to build a relationship and provide a safe place for your coaching clients to really, it sounds to me like to really explore themselves in a really substantial, and again, I use the word intimate way. And not specific to them, to one client is an architect who's 42 years old, and the other one is an engineer, and the other one is something else, but who they are, and I think you use the words humans. And I think, we're in a place right now in society where we're struggling with the idea of accepting that one thing that there are two things that people have in common with each other, with my absolute certainty. One is that people are human. And I don't think as they say that. I think that's something that you and I have in common with each other and everybody else that we encounter in our lives. The other common thing we have in common is that we're different from each other. And in terms of our personalities, our eye color, our facial expression, our facial hair, all those different things that get thrown in the bucket when we talk about diversity and we talk about inclusion, which are two words that are being used quite a bit now, and not to a bad end, all with good intention, and generally achieving positive. Some acceptance of the notion of what differences should be as we graduate from generation to generation, where the younger generations I'm sure you well know this, but they don't see skin pigment in the same way that my generation sees skin pigment. I look at the screen here; it's easy because I've got a kind of a reddish complexion, but we're two white men. Right. But I could also be talking to a black female. And so we're different from each other. Those differences are, again, I'm very adamant about this, is something that we have in common with each other. And so commonality is something that we ought to cherish and try to build on your thoughts.
It's that element of respect that you were talking about, right? Just because we're different from each other doesn't mean that we can't understand each other.
Correct.
Or find commonalities. Mm-hmm. The conversations I often have with people around empathy, and unfortunately, I think it's one of those things we're losing the ability to be empathetic with each other, is to understand where other people are coming from. And the only way to do that is to talk with each other and to share and try to see the other person's perspective.
Yes.
I think we're on the right path, honestly, with DEI and all of the efforts that are being made to level the playing field. Mm-hmm. I'm sometimes concerned when initiatives like that are done in a vacuum, sort of rote, simply because, well, this is just the thing we have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a training we have to do.
It's a box to check, as opposed to really following through with the intention behind it to understand why we're doing certain things.
Yeah.
And I think maybe sometimes we run afoul of that.
Yes.
Is that, well, we're just doing DEI because that's what everybody does these days. It's the thing that's current.
Yes.
And as soon as it's not current, we're going to be moving to something else. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, actually understand the reason. And on both sides too, a lot of the frustration, anger, uncertainty that is in society right now, I think is because there's been so much change and people don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And they haven't been given the tools to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's actually got to be part of the conversation, is allowing for the value that each person brings to the table, the humanity of each person.
Yeah.
And that diversity, equity, and inclusion is actually a win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
There's no zero-sum game in all of it, right? It's not that, oh, you want your rights, and so therefore I'm not going to have mine.
Yeah.
But there is this undercurrent of people feeling that DEI and human rights, equal rights, that it's an attack that they're going to lose something from. And I think we need to re-message things where DEI is, look, this is for all of us, and you get to come along with us.
Right.
Right? We want you. Inclusion means you too.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean me to the expense of you.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So I've been thinking, I had a conversation with a friend about that this weekend, just sort of musing about what is it that's making it so hard for some people to accept DEI as a valid approach to interacting with each other. And I think part of it is because there's so much concern placed on being inclusive, but we're not messaging that inclusion means you too.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Good topic to end our ended conversation. And I'm glad we had a chance to talk about your coaching practice. And I'll just mention again that, you know, if anybody wants to engage with you, you're easy to find. You're on LinkedIn.
I am on LinkedIn and love to talk with people. So hit me up, send me an email, visit my website. Would love to chat with you.
Yeah. Well, we need to keep you busy because, I mean, if you're idle, you'll just start looking for another job someplace and who knows what'll happen.
That's it.
Thank you so much for spending time with me.
Dennis, thank you very much for the invitation. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Softest Steel Podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Softest Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Softest Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Softest Steel Podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.